One. My name is Lena Tarot, and I will be the host for tonight. Tonight, we're going to hear from Cal Armstrong about learning math in a digital environment. Would everyone please introduce themselves in the chat window, telling us what you teach, where you teach, and what your Twitter handle is, if you have one. It looks like we actually are truly a global math department tonight. We do have people from Australia, and of course, Cal is from Canada. And it looks like we have people from the East Coast. I don't know if we have many people from the West Coast at this point, but we do have people from a variety of places around the United States. So welcome, everyone. Before I introduce and turn the presentation over to our speaker, let me explain a little bit about how these meetings work. These meetings are recorded, and because you signed up for one of these meetings, you will get the email sent to you with a link to the presentation. To view the recordings, you would just click on the link that would be in your email. The Global Math Community prides itself on being friendly and supportive. The chat room is available for topical and general conversation throughout the meeting. I'll catch your questions for the presenter, so don't worry that he won't notice it in the chatter. Tonight, our speaker is Cal Armstrong. Cal teaches mathematics at an independent school in Oakville, Ontario, just outside of Toronto. And he is on staff at the Park City Math Institute's Teacher Leadership Program. He tweets through SIG225 and blogs at continuousformation.blogspot.com. So welcome, Cal.
Thanks, Lee. Am I on now then?
I hear you. Hopefully other people will hear you as well. Okay. If you can hear Cal, say yes in the chat window.
Perfect. Looks like it's going fine. Okay, welcome folks, and thanks for joining us tonight. I'm going to talk about learning math in a digital environment. And just a brief introduction, there's me. I did not turn my video on because it doesn't have an active Photoshop, whereas that picture has been Photoshopped. So I look better than I do right now. But that's my Twitter ID that Lee's already shared, and I will just scribble in my actual email address so that folks can get that. So it's Cal. Well, of course, my handwriting is an awful mess. Cal_Armstrong, usual spelling, Outlook. And I can't even spell Outlook. Nerves will do to you. Outlook.com. So you're welcome to email me if anything comes up. You're welcome to tweet at me if anything comes up, and feel free to share that with anyone else. I wasn't sure how things would go, and I was still fighting with myself over how I'm going to develop this as we go. And so it's going to be developed as you guys demand. So if something comes up, we'll adjust as it goes. And I've tried to make it as constructive as possible so that you can sort of see how the sausage is made in the actual real life math classroom. So let's get started. What you might notice is this is not a PowerPoint. This is actually a OneNote that I've created. And if you're the type of person who likes to dig in, I was not sure how many people would show up. So I made 5 logins. More than one person at a time can be logged in under the same account. But if you want to give it a shot, and if you're the type of person who just wants to dig in and play, what you would do is go to that web address and log in under one of those accounts, and you would see what I see from a student perspective. So if you're worried that you're going to screw something up, you can't because you're a student. That's part of the nice little thing about the OneNote class notebook. Try as you might, you can't screw anything up. And you'll still see what I see in the teacher's part. So I'll come back to this later. So if you haven't had a chance to scribble this down, we'll come back to the logins later and you can play with it. I am going to deactivate these accounts after about a week because they are real life accounts that you could like use Word and email and all that. So just for security's sake, I'll deactivate them in about a week. But that gives people who only see the recording a chance to play with it as well. So let's move on. When I was looking at sort of how we developed the class notebook, and a bit of a brag here, which I'm uncomfortable doing, but I'm reminded that I should do it from time to time. In 2012, our school sat down and we'd played with OneNote and Google Docs for the longest time, and we couldn't get anything we liked. And so we broke OneNote apart and pieced it back together in a way that worked across a wide variety of teachers. If you put two teachers in a room, they'll come up together and they'll argue and they'll find three perfect ways of presenting material that none of them will agree on. So when you work with tools and you work across schools and across departments, you really need a tool that will respond to a teacher's chosen pedagogy, to a teacher's content. I mean, we're all math teachers, but of course, this is a tool that's used in a variety of different content areas. So when we developed the OneNote class notebook, we threw it out to the teachers and they came back with all the different ideas, and then we passed it off to Microsoft and they took the ball and ran with it. So that's what you sort of see as the result. And there's enough rubrics on how good teaching is meant to transpire. This one's from Britain, the Shell Project, Alan Schoenfeld, Phil Darrow. And when I look at this across sort of five dimensions, the content is really described by us and in Canada, the ministry, in the US, a variety of states, and around the world, perhaps the IB. Cognitive demand is set by the teachers, but it's these last three that really sort of define how we wanted to use the tools. And our initial driving factor was formative assessment. Every tool we looked at really tried to limit on how much formative assessment we could give and the ease with which we could give it. And the original paper I wrote when it came to the OneNote class notebook really focused on how we used OneNote to work on formative assessment. And you'll see as we go that really it's a communication between the student and the teacher, both individually and as a class, that really drives the good teaching that we find inside of OneNote. When it comes to equitable access to content, you'll recognize this picture. When we first looked at the tools that were available to us back in 2012, kids come with different devices, they come from different backgrounds, and although I do teach at an independent school and you know my kids are often one percenters, we also have kids who are not. And what we try to do is find a tool that would work across those environments. So if our kid walked home and didn't have access to the internet or even reasonable access to the internet in terms of speed, that was an issue where even though you were giving them a boost by putting them on a pedestal, it was on a set of boxes, it was a rickety pedestal because it could collapse on them. And so by removing the need to have internet at home, OneNote stores a copy on the hard drive, the students can continue to work as well as any other student on their content. So that was our drivers when it came to the OneNote class notebook. Looking at formative assessment and how we could improve that and how we could make sure that as much as possible the tool allowed for equity. As I did mention, I do teach at a private school, so all of our kids have these wonderfully expensive pen-based tablets. And so when I present to people, they go, yeah, but my students are not provided with a one-to-one pen-based tablet. So one of my goals when I did my research project a couple of years ago was to go to schools that were using OneNote that were not like us. So I was in the inner schools of Glasgow, I was in the Netherlands, I've been across the US and in Canada at a variety of different schools from kindergarten through to grade 12 and university. and it responds really well to a variety of environments. When I was in Glasgow, they would work on their phones, and they would open up OneNote on their phones, and they would write out their mathematics there. The teacher, fortunately, had a pen-based tablet and would work on the inking, but the students themselves, they could actually ink using a mouse into the browser. So having a tool that responded to those variety of environments is really important for equity. It's not just a matter of high cost school providing all the individual tools. So I've mentioned it. What do I actually mean? I'm just going to expand that so folks can see that while I do some scribbling. What is OneNote Class Notebook? OneNote Class Notebook is a binder. And you all might remember back, well, it depends how old you are, of course, the old Trapper Keepers. The Trapper Keeper, for those of you who were born after maybe 1990, was a binder, a three-ring binder that had a zipper around the outside so that whatever you stuffed in the Trapper Keeper stayed in there and got kept, for example. And you would put all your binder materials in there, and it was broken down, and you'd get the Hilroy colored tabs, and there'd be tabs. So you'd have a tab for math and a tab for science and so on. And all the stuff kept organized inside this Trapper Keeper. So when we sat down and looked at OneNote, we said, well, that's kind of what we want to have. We teach middle school kids, things get lost. We teach high school kids, and there's a lot of content. So we want something that holds everything but keeps it organized. And so if you look off to the side here, I'm just actually going to take a quick screenshot so I can scribble on it. Pop that over here. And keep the passwords on the screen just in case someone's trying to use it. Just move that up over here. And you're sort of seeing how I work in class, sort of bringing content in. So the notebook is one big bundle, and the whole class opens up this bundle. And it's broken up into three major parts. And the part I'm in right now is this content library, and that's a teacher space. And when I said you can't mess anything up, you can't, because that's my space as the teacher, and you can look at it, but you can't touch it. And I'm going to flip over and show you, in case you haven't logged in for yourself, what the student looks like. So you can see at the bottom I have several browsers running, and the one on the far right, the Firefox, is a student. And so there's what the student sees. Let's see if I can blow it up a little bit. I'm in a student four here. And you can see that they see the content library exactly as I have it. And what you may notice is that they don't have a menu bar across the top of the screen. I'm gonna flip back for a second. See, I have all these pens and all these little drawing tools. Kid don't have that. Kid can't do anything. They can try to type, nothing types, nothing changes. So there's a locked space. So it's like having all of your papers at the front of the classroom laminated. They can do whatever they want, they can try whatever they want, they can make a copy of it, they can take a picture of it on their phone, but they can't change anything. And that was really important to us, that we have content we want the kids to have, but we don't want them to muck it up. So that's what we have. We have the teacher space locked away. They can make copies, but they can't change anything within that space. The space above that is the collaboration space. That's where the messy stuff happens. Everyone has access to everything in there. They can edit it, they can change it, they can do whatever they want. So I'm gonna flip back over and show you the student. So there's student four, collaboration space. When I go into the collaboration space, notice the toolbar opens up. Now they've got drawing tools. So the kid can go in there and draw mustaches on all the people in the diagram. And I can't say no, because no, they have access to it. Now, someone's in there panicking going, oh Lord, yes, you can figure out who has changed what. So there's that possibility. And you can revert it back to an earlier setting. So if they go in and screw everything up, you can say, you know what, I want to go back to the version that was at 9 o'clock this morning, and you can reset it. And you can talk to the young person and say, you know what, maybe you might want to try something different. So the collaboration space, wide open. It's really handy to have, because what you can do is you can just sort of throw a question in there and say, okay, kids, brainstorm. And they can all start writing and doing things at a different time. Now, is that a good idea? No. And you might notice off to the side, there's a little tab that says 3, 4, 5. Well, I'm student four right now, right? So my student is four. You can create a subspace for a group of kids. And because I'm student four right now, they see whatever student four has access to. I'm going to put my teacher hat back on and switch over to being a teacher. Notice what the teacher sees over here in the collaboration space. There's 3, 4, 5 that student four saw, but then right above it is 1, 2. There's a separate space that they can't even see that student one and student two are playing in. So if I have a group project, I can go in and make a special group for every one of my little groups that only they can see and I can see, and they can play in there. If you have a class of 20, 30 kids, the wide open space of the collaboration space can get pretty messy. Break it down, and then students can work on their own in their smaller groups. What I often have happen in the wild, wild west of the collaboration space, I'll have a group of kids create a page and put a password on it. And then no other kid can access that page unless they know the password. And that gives them some private space that I don't have to set up in advance. And so often when they'll do review, they'll break themselves up into private groups and they'll do that. The only challenge is that if they forget the password, they're out of luck because even Microsoft can't break into it. So you have two options. You can either create the groups for them or they can use password protect and create the groups themselves. So we've got the Wild West of the group space, and we've got the, I can't even spell group. Here we go. We got the Wild West of the group space, and we've got the teacher space where it's a teacher content and it's protected. And finally, every kid has their own space that's protected for themselves. So that's all their stuff. That's their binder for my course. That's where everything that they do goes. They have complete control over it. They can do whatever they want. And they're going to basically mimic what I'm doing in my space as they learn the content. So I'm going to flip back and show you what student four sees. So there's student four. She or she sees a content library, but down below that, they only see their section. They don't even know that student five exists, student one exists. They only see the stuff that's in their section, and they have complete control over it. So let me flip back.
Yep. Cal, there's a question about passwords. So is there an advantage to allow students to have a password protected space that you do not have the password to?
I understand where the question's coming from. Things can happen that are things that you might not want to have happen, but they will happen in your space or some other space. So is it the best of possible worlds that there's a space that they could be doing things that you would not approve of in your binder? Yes. But they could also be doing it in a password protected Word document, Google Doc, Google Slides. They're going to do stuff that you don't want them to do, and they're going to password protect it. Is there a way around that? No. Password protection is built in as part of the OneNote system, so there's no way to actually turn that off. You can lock the collaboration library. So if you're concerned about students doing that, you can lock the collaboration library. When you want them to do a group activity, you unlock it. They can do whatever they want, and then you can lock it again. That will likely minimize it a little bit in terms of their behaviors. And often, like everything with technology, it's a conversation, and you deal with it as it comes along. They will find ways to make a mess of things that you wish they wouldn't. But yes, you are correct. They could do things in the background that you would not approve of. Okay, I hope that answered that as well as I could. Let's keep going. So that's the structure of the OneNote class notebook. And where that comes in handy is when you're dealing with stuff you want to give to the student. And so if you look over on the left or the right here, there's this space here called teacher only. And if I flip back to the student just for a second, they don't have that, obviously, because it's teacher only. They don't even know it exists. It's like having a file folder in a file drawer that the kids don't even see. And what you use that for is your planning. What's gonna happen in the next few days that you don't want them to see. And so you see here, I just grabbed a copy of my textbook and I want to be able to send that all to them. Now, a lot of folks push being paperless. I really don't care how much paper I use or don't use, but here I've got a copy of the textbook in PDF form that I printed into OneNote. I guess I shouldn't have done that because I should have showed you how that works. Let me do it from scratch. I'm just going to add a page and I'm just going to write review questions. This is what I would do sort of the night before or, you know, 5 minutes before class because I've forgotten to do it. I'm going to insert a PDF and pull up my textbook. Where did I put my textbook? There we go. And grab the review. Just pull the review out. And it's going to take the PDF, which would normally open up in a separate program, and print it right onto the page. So this is now stuck on the page. I can write on top of it and just put do this. But it's in my teacher section right now. Pretty much useless to the kids because they don't even know it exists. So if I want to hand it out, I distribute it. And so I go up to the class notebook tool and I distribute the page. Give me a second here. We should have done this before. And every one of my kids has a unit one. So I ask it, could you please distribute that to unit one? And what it does is it goes out and gives a copy to the student in their unit one section. What happens is it gives them the option now to write on top of it because they can't even see it exists in the teacher section. But once it's put in their section, they have complete control over it. So if I flip back over and look at what's happened in the student sections, see how quickly it worked. Flip up here for our dear unit four student. You can see there it's now been distributed into their section and I'm now student four and I can now answer these questions. So then they can play with it and do whatever they want. So that's the way we distribute things in OneNote. Let me flip back to being a teacher again. Always putting on these different hats. So it's acting as a binder for the entire class. I can see what goes on in every kid's section, except of course Melody, the ones that are password protected. How often does that happen to me? Pretty rarely. They usually keep it to the group section. Pass it off to the kids when I want them to have content. And now I want to maybe see what they've been doing with that content. So if I've distributed something, I now want to sort of check to see what they've done. And that's up again here where I look for the review student work. I've distributed out some content and I want to go look at it. So what page do you want to look at? Well, I want to look at the review questions that I distributed out. And I see all of my students. And when I click on it, I jump right to the page that they were at and I see what they've done. Now, student five has been somewhat lazy, so they haven't done very much, but I can look at what they've done and say, okay, five, do more. And I can give them some feedback. And then I can jump to our dear friend, student four, who drew some black lines on it. And I can say, okay, that's great work, student four. Nice job. Jump to student one and so on. And very quickly flip through between the students. What I liked about it when we first worked on this was there's no opening files. All the stuff is automatically there. I don't have to save things. I don't have to move things around. It's just there and I can work with it. And just jump back and forth between the students as I go and give them some feedback as I move along. What's really nice to do is at the very beginning of class, sort of as I walk in, quickly do a quick review and see who've done their homework. Because by then, of course, the last kid in the last class has just finished it up during his French class. And I can sort of see who's done what just before class begins. So that's sort of the process from the classroom perspective. I distribute stuff out and then I review it. There's some other things you can play around with in there. There's a grading section that I'm not gonna show you because I don't actually have it hooked up to a grade book yet. And there's a bit of stuff on locking the page after the student has done it. So if you don't want them to make any more changes or if you don't wanna change the F that you just wrote on their page into an A, you can lock that page. And there's some other stuff coming down the road that I can't talk about in terms of sort of, I can't talk about it. So I'll just be quiet, Calvin. Okay, let's keep going before I get in trouble. So I sort of showed you what screen clipping was like. It's how I get a lot of content into the OneNote. OneNote will accept absolutely any file you want. So if you have a special science measurement tool that you use in your class. You can actually drop that on the page and every kid will be able to access it. But for me, screen clipping is where I pull most of the content. I'm just going to flip over to a browser and give you an idea. Let me just actually pull up the big marker thing. Once hands raised, I wonder what that means. And if I just do a quick screenshot and paste it in, I can start writing on things and playing with it. What's nice is that it's in there as a picture. If I clip it, I can then save it for other things. I can play with it a little bit. It doesn't have a full imaging set, but it does allow you to play with a little bit of it. I can set it as background because right now I can move it around. If it's a maze or something like that, I don't want them to move around. What I can do, let me clip it off there a second. Clip it off there a second. Thank you. Is I can set it as background and that locks it into place. So now I can't move it around. It moves with the page. That's a nice little thing that comes in handy when you're dealing, especially with elementary school kids, where they play around with it a bit and they want to be able to lock things in place for them. So screen clipping, great way to borrow stuff from the internet if you have a nice activity. It really pulls things really quickly for use.
Cal, there's a couple more questions in the chat window, if you don't mind. One is, do students use the mouse to write? Obviously if they have a stylus, they can use a stylus, but do they typically use the mouse to write?
So that's interesting. Our students tend to have styli. What happens when they don't have it is they minimize the amount of writing they have to do. They will type what they can type, and then they'll turn to the mouse to sort of ink what they can't type easily. And I was watching a couple of folks when I was in Glasgow, and the one girl, she was very good at when she kind of knew when she couldn't type meaningful mathematics or it took her too long to actually write it. And then she would just quickly switch to the mouse, draw it out, and then keep going. And she could very quickly task switch when it was appropriate to use a mouse and when it was appropriate to just type. I think what we're seeing as we go along is the more and more styluses come along. Chromebook now is a stylus that you could use the iPad, OneNote's on the iPad. I could go on for days about how important digital ink is. So if you're looking for devices, trying to give at least the teachers the option to use digital ink and the students as well. Francis has a question. Can they keep a personal copy of the material that show up in their personal file sections? Yeah, that's their section. And at the end of the school year, they can pull it out and keep it forever and ever. And in terms of copyright, I'm not sure what jurisdiction you're in. We can distribute a chapter or up to, I think, 10% of the book, so long as we track it. The way we deal with it in our school is we require the students to purchase a copy of the book so that they have at least purchased the license for it. I know that's a little bit different than public schools. And so I think it's important to sort of track what you're using. For example, when you saw me distribute that review section, I wouldn't normally do that. I did that for the convenience of time. I would only pull out the questions I wanted them to work on and try to distribute that across a number of textbooks, along with the answers, of course. I don't know what you mean by you say let teachers have digital ink. Ah, okay, sure, that's a great question. When you have a device sitting in front of you, you have a keyboard. And when you have a keyboard, you can type things, and it's great. The only problem is, if you start to do math, how do you type, and I'm going to use calculus for an example, how do you type an integral easily? It's really quite challenging to get that integral sign in. So what I mean by digital ink is a device that lets you use a pen or a pencil to actually create the characters on the screen. So I'm actually sitting in front of a laptop and I'm writing on the glass screen that gives you these characters on the screen, and it understands it. Really handy to have. Okay, good question. The next way I bring content in is Office Lens. And let me just flip over to Office Lens. And I'm not showing you on my video camera because I don't want you to show my messy house, but I'm holding my phone. And on my phone, there's an app called Office Lens. And what it lets me do is take a picture. Great, Cal, takes a picture. And then pushes it into OneNote. So if I'm working on a piece of paper, on a whiteboard, on anything you might want to have, and I write a math problem out, and I'm writing, I can hear my marker scribbling around the page, and the student's working on it, and my students work on whiteboards, they work on desktops, they will use a whiteboard marker absolutely anywhere, and I encourage that, much to the chagrin of my cleaner. And then I come along and I take a picture of it. And when I take a picture of it with the Office Lens app, it pushes it automatically into my OneNote. And so that way I'm grabbing their physical content and now having to be able to play with it digitally. The students do this when they do work on the board so they don't lose it. They don't have to recopy it. They don't miss out on it because, for example, their partner was away. It just pulls it automatically into their OneNote and allows them to use it later. So while we're waiting for that to sing, I'm just going to answer the question about Equation Editor. And Lee's popped in there. Yeah, the Equation Editor is a great tool. And it goes back to that equity issue. It's a great way of helping the students get into the mathematics, but it's a rocky set of boxes because you have to really work at using it. And it's not as easy as a kid who can just write it. So it becomes an equity and convenience issue for students. And so if you have the option, move towards DigiLink because it gives a cleaner platform for everybody. And Equation Editor is a great tool and I've used it all the time. But just that one little hint that it's not a global solution for everybody. So let me just clear that away. All right. So thank you for bringing up Equation Editor too. And that was works a great tool with Google Docs. Okay, flip through there. I'm trying to see where it's synced in. I this is not my normal OneNote, so I'm not syncing into the same situation. So let me pull that in. Let's see all my little OneNotes here. Nope, doesn't want to flip over. Okay. Well, let's move on. Okay. As I said to poor Lee, I said I have about six hours of content, and I'm going to try to do it in about an hour. So, and it's trying to be a bear on me. So, 30 seconds. Okay. So there's the picture of the note that I just scribbled on a piece of paper, and OneNote just pushed it right into my notebook. And now I can write content on it and say, you know, this is great work and give that feedback to the student, or the student can write that additional commentary on their notes as well. So that's Office Lens. It grabs any physical content and then pushes it into OneNote for use later. And you sort of see it timestamps it, so you know I'm not just fibbing you. Okay. Now I'll skip the OneNote web clipper just so we can move on so I don't run out of a ridiculous amount of time. The idea with OneNote Class Notebook was to collect all this stuff and then have to work on it. And so what OneNote has tried to develop are additional tools inside the program to do mathematics. And a lot of you folks have mentioned Equation Editor, and I'm just gonna see how well I can write. My handwriting is atrocious. The students laugh at me all the time. So when you write mathematics, you will occasionally wanna be able to do it in typeset. And so what you can see there is when I've written in ink, it recognizes it as text. And that's nice and cool, and sometimes it works really well, and sometimes you notice there's a little fix-it in the lower left-hand corner. So you might have to nudge it a little bit to recognize that it's a 5. But it recognizes it as text. Below that is an action box. And so it recognizes it as mathematics, and it actually has a meaning in mathematics. And so you can ask it to actually do the steps to solve it. And so you can actually show the steps for the mathematical question. Now, I know somewhere in the background, some teachers just had a heart attack because, oh no, we've got the answer sitting there. You can actually turn this off. So if you don't want them to have access to this, yeah, you can turn it off. But it does have that intelligence built in, that if they write or type the mathematics, it can interpret it and then deal with it. And you can sort of see the options for this simple linear equation. It can actually produce a nice small little graph of both sides of the equation, and you can then work with it and, you know, make points and, oh, look, here's the intersection point, and then interact with it in that way. And so one of the things I noticed when I talk to people about OneNote is that a lot of that intelligence that we expect in other programs is coming into the background in OneNote. It recognizes handwriting. It recognizes the handwriting actually means something mathematical, and then gives you options based upon that content to do with stuff. So one example, let me just turn that off for a second, is an elementary example, which I thought was kind of cute. Maybe not so elementary. Let me just blow that up a bit so folks can see. If I type a list of numbers and then go back to math, you can actually do mean, median, and mode based upon that list of numbers, which is kind of cool. You know, it recognizes that it's a list and there's some meaning to that list, and you can actually do something with it. So there's intelligence inside of OneNote that you can play with, or you can turn off if you'd rather not then have access to it. Besides that, it actually is a built-in calculator. Now, let me just make sure I play from here. I'm doing trig right now, it's a fault to a size too small for anyone to see. There we go. So we're doing trig right now, and it will actually calculate trig, and then of course do the reverse as well. Oops, that's not right. And so you'll see the kids, instead of having a calculator, they'll just do the sort of simple operations inside of OneNote and do that as well. So there's a bit of intelligence built inside. Melody, I see the question, and you just forget the analogy, but does student use a smartphone, work on running a laptop at home on the same? Yeah, so there is a sliding scale of ability based upon device. The smaller the device, clearly the less opportunity there is to interact with the actual content. So on their phones, they can type, they can view, they can make new pages, but they can't really ink, and you really wouldn't expect that on a phone. As you move up the scale, on any web device, you can ink. So if I flip back over and pretend I'm the student again, the student has access to inking. So if they're on a Chromebook, they can actually ink with their mouse or their trackpad. I wouldn't recommend it long term, but they could actually ink on their device. There's an app for the iPad. There's an app for the Macintosh, and then of course there's the Windows. Microsoft is trying to make sure that it's as equivalent as possible across platforms, but they're obviously a Windows company, and so the Windows one is the most fully featured. But when I'm on my phone, I am looking at student work, and I might type a comment. I just won't necessarily ink. So you do have the opportunity to interact with the content on the smaller devices. Is digital math part of OneNote? Yes, this math stuff is built in. So if I flip back to being the teacher, the students have access to this digital math component as soon as they install the application, unless the teacher has turned it off for their class notebook. Because again, sometimes you want to do that. So all of that stuff I just did with it recognizing the equation and graphing it and solving it, that's all built in, and the student and you don't have to do anything. Really, all you have to do is write the equation or type it. If I type it, y equals 3x plus 2, that's lowercase, y equals 3x plus 2 plus 2. Let's see. Font size. And then hit the math button. It recognizes it, and then the graph it. Of course, that's a, there we go, graph in 2D. Oh, bad choice. Let's solve it. Oh, that's kind of silly, isn't it? Okay, literal solution. So you can type it. It will actually do a nice little bit of LaTeX too. Let me just try to write that out. If I write x squared plus 3x plus 2, blow it up again because it's so small. It will actually format it nicely for you. So that's a nice thing for the kids to be able to sort of format their text a little bit nicer. And it'll do it from ink as well. One thing I haven't used a lot because I don't do a lot of geometry is that on-screen ruler. And what it will do, it will allow you to actually draw an actual straight line as opposed to the scribble. Right? If I tried to draw it straight, I would just do a horrible job at it. And so this let me sort of set the thing, and it collapses it right onto the ruler. I don't use that a lot, but I know there are some folks who really love that. And if I draw a really crappy square, and I select it, he says it will clean it up, but it won't. Did I do so bad a job that it didn't? Let me try a circle. Like I said, my penmanship, it lasts a great deal to be desired. No, doesn't want to do it. Okay. What it should do is it should actually clean that circle up, so it actually is a circle, and this one also a square. This one doesn't want to do that today. I turn the ruler off. Nope, doesn't want to do it. Okay, not free at that then. So that's the math that's built into OneNote. It's always increasing, and all the intelligence that I can't talk about is coming as well. You haven't seen the on-screen ruler before. So I noticed that too, because I was practicing on my desktop. I couldn't find it. It's because it's only available to you if you have a touchscreen device. So if you have a device that's recognized, because obviously you have to interact with it. I'm using my fingers to move it around and rotate it. I have to use two fingers to rotate it. And so if you have a touchscreen device, so you likely have it on an iPad, but a Microsoft Surface, or I've got a Fujitsu tablet. So long as you have a touchscreen, I think you'll have the option to use the ruler. If it recognizes you don't have a touchscreen, you won't even get the option for the ruler, just to be clear on that. Okay. Surface Pro, it should be on there, and you and I can chat later and we can sort that one out, because it should definitely be on there. It might just be out of date on your application. Okay. The other thing is, I don't know where you are, but the whole world in Canada is in love with Desmos. So I'm just going to head over to Desmos and just start graphing. And you can actually just graph in Desmos and take a screenshot of it. That works perfectly. And we do that all the time in math class. We'll have the kids work on Desmos and screenshot it and then bring it in. But what you can also do is if you share the graph and copy the link, when you pull it back into OneNote, it actually embeds it right into the screen. And the reason why that's so handy is that you keep the kids focused on the Desmos instead of opening them up into a web browser. Because I don't know if you ever taught kids, as soon as you put them in a web browser, the whole world opens up to them. So now you've got them inside of the OneNote, and depending upon your IT department, you could just lock them into OneNote so they couldn't open a browser, and it would still pull the Desmos from them. And of course, once you've got it in there, you can again take a screenshot of it, talk about it, paste the image right next to it, talk about it, and then change a number inside of the Desmos. It says, try step a 4 and doesn't want to come in. I can get 24s in there later. I'm gonna type that in. Come on. I lost my keyboard. Awesome. Okay. Okay, being a bear, another line, y equals 4x, 4x. There we go. And now I have another line that I can now compare with the red line. So you can embed Desmos in there. You can embed GeoGebra in there. You can embed YouTube videos. And if you flip down, if you're in the OneNote into the next page, I'm not gonna go through this article, but there's a YouTube video embedded inside the OneNote, so you don't have to send them out to the web. You can send them into the page, and then they can play the YouTube video from there. The more you can collapse it inside the OneNote, the easier it is to sort of keep them where you want them to be. I'm just gonna cough for 1 second. Candace, yes, it's free. My mother's Dutch, my father's from Scottish family, and so I don't spend any money, I don't have to. And so the whole OneNote system is free. So what I'm working on is a school office account that is completely free for me. So I'm a teacher, but I have a complete school based in Office 365 that's completely free, including the OneNote part. Basically, the only thing you pay for is the device, and that becomes sort of a discussion later. But yeah, OneNote's completely free, and the office system it rests on is completely free. Now, there's stuff you could pay for, And my school does pay for the extra bits. But on its own, what you see here, me working with students, everything is completely free. I don't pay for anything. Cheap. Okay, so yeah, you can embed Desmos, you can embed YouTube, you can embed GeoGebra, and there's a few other things that you can embed. Flipgrid, you can embed, and it really does help contain the stuff that the students are doing. And so what you see next is sort of a page I grabbed from my class notebook. We were talking about linear systems, and we threw them up to the board, and we had them solve these. And so, of course, I went around and I snapped pictures, and you can sort of see the difference. The reason why I picked this, the one on the left is from Office Lens. Excuse me. It's straight on. It's cleaned up. The one on the right was just a picture, and you can sort of see how it's kind of bent to the side and not straightened out. So Office Lens does that nice little cleanup of the image. It makes it brighter. It increases the contrast, so it knows that it's a whiteboard, whereas the other one's just a picture. And so this is what I do at the end of class. The kids are up on the whiteboard. I snap the pictures and I pull them in, and then I can sort of point out things that they might not have noticed as we were doing it. Or if I mention something in class, I scribble that down at the end. Once I've got all this done, I've got my notes from my class for the day, and then I go back up to the class notebook and I go to the distribute and I send it out to them. So they don't necessarily have had to take any notes. What I've done is I've taken the notes for them, made up from what they did on the whiteboard. For those of you who do vertical non-permanent surfaces, take pictures and then ship it out to them. And I usually do some markup in between just so I capture some of the important things that they might not have thought to write down themselves. And of course, they can go back in and add additional content, but you know, for kids, they don't do that as much as they should. So that's now all been pushed out to the kids, and they now have a copy of my notes inside of their section for them to work on. So just looking at the time. A couple of things I mentioned about equity, and it's sort of a growth thing for OneNote and for Microsoft in general. One thing that's ruled out across the board is dictation. It's not perfect with the mathematics part yet, but it does work really well if you're doing a conversation with a kid. I don't know where you are in terms of the globe, in terms of how you do assessment, but the district I'm in, Ontario, is very focused on having conversations with kids. And so I want them to sit down and talk about the mathematics with me. And if I turn dictation on, it will actually try to do a pretty darn good job of actually recording what I say and putting it into text. So when the student is talking, it will actually create the text for me. It's obviously an equity thing if the student is having difficulty explaining what they're doing by actually writing things down, they can turn this on and have it actually do this for them. When I try it with math equations, you know what, you get the English text, and that's a bit of a problem. Sort of seeing the long-term plans, that intelligence is going to start to come back in. I'm just going to turn that off because it gets a bit silly after a while. You can then translate that. And when it comes to students who come from away, you want to be able to translate things. So this is a blog post from Illustrative Mathematics and sort of the web clipper. If you see anything on the web, you can just push it right into OneNote in the same way as I pushed in a picture. Anything you find, just hit the button, and it just makes a copy in your OneNote. It's awesome for stealing, boring stuff. So when you have the text there, you can ask it to translate the whole page into a number of languages. So obviously I'm not going to change to English. You sort of see, I can't remember, like 60 different languages. So kids who are, you've shipped out the work for the day, and you know they're Spanish speakers, and you know maybe they can't understand all of the English words. They can get a copy in Spanish. It'll take the whole content of the page and rewrite it in Spanish for them. And it's a great thing to sort of leveling the playing field, because we have students, they come on exchange, and you know they don't necessarily speak English, and they can pull in their home language. And also works the reverse. If They're trying to write the explanation for a problem. I say, you know what, just write it in your home language and we'll just flip over the and work on the translation from there. So it's all about taking away that fence and looking at it through the sort of the non-barrier viewpoint. So that's all built into OneNote and free. The other thing is, again, sort of the accessibility thing. This is another page I stole. I can't remember where this was stolen from. I think if I click on the link, it'll take me. For those kids with vision difficulties or reading difficulties for which other things might be helpful, there's the immersive reader. And what it does is, it's not particularly helpful because it gets rid of the diagrams, but it actually makes the text larger. And they can resize it to what they want. They can add a focus line. Where's the focus line? Line focus. So if they have difficulty reading in terms of keeping track of where they are, that can go on. And it will also read it to them. And that's all built in. Now, based upon different students, that might be effective or not effective, but it does give them the options. You know what? I can't deal with the actual text. I can deal with it in a different fashion. So it's, again, it's about that equity. Use the technology, take advantage of it to make your life handy. And it's interesting because our faculty have kids at home and they often will use the immersive reader with their own children because it helps the beginning learners sort of at the young age to sort of read new text. So that's part of the immersive reader. Okay, let me flip one more time. And I'm going to move a little bit out of OneNote just to add on the last little bit. I said you could embed Desmos, you could embed YouTube. You can also embed quizzing. And so if you want a formative assessment, Forms is the sort of the Google Forms equivalent to in the Microsoft world. And so I'm just going to flip over to Microsoft Office and pull up the Forms. And I just wanted to bring this up in terms of that intelligence we saw in OneNote. Oh, poop. In my French. I want to go. Nope. Sorry, that's my bad. I set it up on the desktop and didn't set it up on the other machine. In 30 seconds, let me log in as who I think I am. Thanks for the ad, Microsoft. Okay. Yeah, great. Okay, so Microsoft Forms is the equivalent of Google Forms, except when you get into the intelligence. So head on over to Quiz, and we're going to create a new question. Let's make a multiple choice question. Blow it up. Oh, maybe not that big. And what I want to do is I want to switch over to know that it's in math. So that sets it up in math format. And you might have noticed it kind of added a second line that says enter an equation. And when you do that, you get an equation editor. So I'm going to say my question is factor the following. And I'm just going to put a quadratic in. So that's going to be what? X. Oh, I can use x squared right there. Back up. Something like that. X squared. There we go. Okay, that works good. Yeah, let's give it a 2 because I want to play with that. X squared. That's 5x plus 6. Easiest possible quadratic in the world. Okay, and I want it to factor that. It didn't do what I expected. I think it's because I've been playing around with it. So I can figure that away. I'll type that one more time. X squared plus 5x plus 6. There we go. That's what I was expecting. So it's supposed to recognize that that's an equation and suggest correct answers for it. So yeah, I want to accept that as a correct answer, and then I can put in other questions. What becomes interesting is it recognized that I put a particular type of question in, and then it suggests other questions based upon that sort of topic area. So it's pulling up that it knows it's a quadratic, and that I want to factor it, and here's some that could be factorable or may not be factorable. So it not only suggests answers to your questions, but also other questions. And across the board, that's the kind of intelligence that we're starting to see sort of come into into sort of the Microsoft. I sound like a Microsoft salesperson. I swear to God, I get no money from Microsoft. But they took my program, so I was kind of happy about that. Okay. And I think that brings us up to speed. And there's the Microsoft Forms. I wasn't sure if my internet would quit, so I put some examples in the thing. And that leaves me with 5 minutes, which would give me time to answer any questions that you may have or not. Did I miss anyone? If you're using OneNote Online, you're not going to see the ruler. You're going to want to use the Windows version. How do you send that form back to your OneNote? Ah, so let me flip over where to my OneNote was. Okay, so there's my OneNote form. In Forms, you hit the Share button, and you get the link to the form. And so I copy it. Actually, let me switch that so anyone with the link. Copy it, and I go back to Microsoft. Or sorry, go back to OneNote, and I just paste the link, and it'll behave just like you saw the Desmos behave, and it puts the form inside the page. And then, of course, they can answer it from there. So I put it in there, hit submit, and then they answered it. Okay. So again, the more you can bring it into OneNote and don't let the kids in a browser, the easier life gets. How long does it take your class? Oh, that's a great question, because I've been tracking it for years now. It takes a teacher 6 hours of working with OneNote to be pretty darn confident to do anything for the school year. And that's held up pretty much. And the reason I want to say 6 hours of working with it, the way we try to train people with OneNote is we put all of the school stuff in OneNote at the beginning of the year. So our whole faculty handbook and all the forms are in OneNote, and we lead them through it. So they get used to working in the OneNote environment. And it takes about 6 hours of that stuff to actually get used to, you know, I can teach a class in OneNote. The students, we have students starting in grade 7. And so we give them about 2 hours of instruction on OneNote. And that's the minimum, I would say. It takes them about 2 hours to get caught up in it. Some kids, you know, they get it like that. Other kids, you know, they need a little bit of coaching. It's pretty intuitive. And as I mentioned at the very beginning, the kids can't screw it up. You have your teacher section. They can look at it. They can't touch it. You push out the content to them. So when they open it up, it's already there for them. And all they have to do is basically, you know, fill in the blanks where you have a blank. Or yes, give them a blank page and say, start writing. So yeah, that's it's 6 hours for the teachers and about 2 hours max for the kids. There's lots of other stuff I haven't touched on because she'd only give me an hour. And you just keep digging from there. Greta, can you collate the forms back in form even though you had the kids answer in OneNote? Yes, Greta, the results for you are all back in on the web. So you can see there's, I have one response. One kid got the right answer, good for him. And so I can pull that back in. I take a screenshot, put it back into OneNote and talk to them. I have an Excel spreadsheet of all the results. I can show them the statistics behind their answers. So yeah, I can pull that all back in into OneNote. How do I find the digital math again? Is it an add-on? No, nothing in OneNote is an add-on. It all depends on what application you're using. So the math is built into the OneNote app on Windows and online. Let me take a look at what it is online. I flip over to the kid online. I don't think you get anything but the symbol editor for now. So math, the smart math you saw under the draw section, you won't see on the web yet. I always have to add the yet because they are trying to make the web as smart as possible. And so it would not surprise me if you started to see the math also started to appear there. But for now, on your Windows device, run the OneNote app and it's just built in. They try to avoid doing the add-in part and just have it all there for you when you need it. Okay. I have 30 seconds left. Let me flip back and, you know, and where's my... ID information. So there's my horrible handwriting with my OneNote or my Outlook account. You're welcome to use my Twitter. How successful is it on a Chromebook? Better than I thought. I've been a pen-based tablet guy for years, like decades. And working with a Chromebook in a browser, it's actually pretty nice. And the pen-based Chromebook, it's really nice. So yeah, it's much better than I thought it would be. So if you can push it onto a pen-based device, a pen-based Chromebook, It's a nice system to work with. The difficulty I have is that equity thing, because again, that's, you need the internet to run a Chromebook effectively. Whereas this, my internet could shut off and I have access to the entire notebook with all the kids' stuff right on my device. And that's really handy. If I'm on a bus, I can work on, and the kids can work on their material without the internet. So it becomes an equity thing. If you can afford the actual computer, it makes life a little bit easier for everybody. But can you get by without it? Sure, you can get by without it. You just try to see how much you can sort of balance away. But yeah, on a Chromebook, the web browser looks nice. You don't get the math part yet, the smart math yet, but you do get the inking, which takes it a long ways. Okay, so it is 10 o'clock.
Yep. Yes, it is. You used every minute of that time. Thank you very much for presenting tonight, Cal. That was a very insightful session. And I know that now I have a better idea of how to use the one notebook. And I will say probably 6 hours of training does seem right. I had maybe 15 minutes, which obviously wasn't enough because I haven't been really using it. So thank you very much. And next week we have Rethinking Math Homework. And that's being presented by Frank Walpole and Evan Borkowski. So we hope you might join us back for that one. And thank you once again, Cal, for a very insightful presentation.
Awesome. Thanks so much, folks. Have a great evening. And minus